Unlike in Georgia, this indictment does not name Donald Trump. Is he the mastermind in your view of all of this?
I mean, this is all built out from, of course, Donald Trump's unwillingness to accept his defeat, despite having ample knowledge to the contrary that it was a free and fair election. So ultimately, yes.
That's Stephen Richert, a top election official in Arizona's most populous county and a Republican, responding to the indictment this week of allies of Donald Trump for allegedly conspiring to steal the 2020 election in Arizona. I'm Margaret Hoover. This is the Firing Line podcast. The indictment of Rudy Giuliani, Mark Meadows, and others follows nearly 4 years of Trump supporters denying the vote count in Arizona.
If we are right about the fraud, Joe Biden can't be president.
No, I never would have thought that we would have become sort of the center of the political conversation in Arizona, and then in some ways the center of the conversation about wither American democracy.
Maricopa County Recorder Stephen Richert's strident defense of the integrity of Arizona's elections put him at odds with fellow Republicans, including Donald Trump.
Donald Trump is your Voldemort.
I don't want to say that. The Dark Lord, please.
Okay, I'm sorry. You shall not be named.
It also brought him death threats and attacks from GOP candidates like Carrie Lake, who he has sued for defamation.
When you have a mega county like Maricopa running elections the way Stephen Richert and his group are, it affects even places where they're running elections well.
This was her meal ticket. This was her ticket to remaining politically relevant. You know, how many punches do you take before you punch back?
So with another presidential election looming, how bad could things get this fall?
I would say to all of the leaders and all the politicians, write down now with a physical pen or pencil in a notebook and say, what are some lines that no matter how tempting or no matter how dire the circumstances I think of the other side winning, I will not cross.
Stephen Richert, welcome to Firing Line.
Thank you very much.
This week, an Arizona grand jury indicted 18 people, including attorneys and aides of former President Trump and Republicans who served as fake electors in 2020. The charges against them include fraud, conspiracy, and forgery. What is your reaction to this indictment?
This one is particularly momentous for me, for everything that we've been talking about for the past 3.5 years. And it does give some resolution. It gives some accountability.
What does it mean to you that you're seeing this degree of accountability from the judicial branch?
I know almost everyone that's named in that complaint. And some of those people who were targets are people who would never otherwise commit a crime in their life. And it just impresses upon me how much this has destroyed some lives. And everyone ultimately bears responsibility for their own actions. And I'm not trying to strip anyone of agency or of their own culpability. But I do have some measure of sympathy, like just like I have a measure of sympathy for people who ask me crazy questions about, did you feed ballots to chickens and then burn chickens? That's something I've actually been asked. And there's a real news story about that. I have some measure of sympathy for somebody who just gets his or her cues from people that they trust or read stories. But where I have no patience is for the leaders who lead them down this road and then abandon them, quite frankly. Abandon all the people who have gotten charged for the different conspiracies in different states. Abandon all the people who have left threatening phone calls.
So to that end, unlike in Georgia, this indictment does not name Donald Trump. Is he the mastermind in your view of all of this?
I mean, this is all built out from, of course, Donald Trump's unwillingness to accept his defeat, despite having ample knowledge to the contrary that it was a free and fair election. So ultimately, yes. And then there were agents who were facilitators.
The indictment alleges that these 11 individuals had schemed to create a false set of electors, yeah, whose votes in the Electoral College could then be counted for Trump-Pence, right, instead of Biden-Harris, thus throwing the election to Donald Trump.
Right. We were all getting text messages. Some of the board members were getting calls from Rudy Giuliani, from the President of the United States, to the effect of, we're all Republicans, we need to do something about this.
And so the Board of Supervisors then reached out to you, the incoming recorder of Maricopa County, who is also a Republican.
Yes, and the board was asked to take express actions such as stop the count.
Mm-hmm. Which they refused to do, as the indictment explains.
Which they refused to do.
At the time the board was reaching out to you, what did they tell you about the pressure campaign they were experiencing?
That it was significant, that it was unrelenting, that it had no basis in fact or in law, that they put me in touch immediately with civil counsel for the Maricopa County Attorney's Office because they said, you're going to start getting these calls and we'd recommend you not take them without legal counsel on the line. We're already being asked to do things that we don't feel comply with law. And that's the world we're in.
They were, the Board of Supervisors of Maricopa County were included four Republicans and one Democrat.
That's right.
Were they unanimous in their views and their counsel to you?
Unanimous. These are guys, four guys who have been part of the Republican Party for a long time, some of whom campaigned for Trump, many of whom considered themselves part of the grassroots. And I think that they wanted to do something, but I think it crossed the boundaries that they had set, the lines that they had set. And so none of them were interested in stopping the count.
You're a Republican. Adrian Fuentes, your predecessor in the recorder's office, is a Democrat.
Correct.
Do you have confidence in his work, both when he was recorder and now as Secretary of State of Arizona?
I have absolute confidence in the process because everything checks out. I doubt that anyone in the country has looked at the 2020 election in Arizona more than I have, and it checks out 100%.
Let me ask you about somebody who is also named in the indictment, Speaker Rusty Bowers. It details an extensive pressure campaign against Speaker Bowers. He refused to go along with the pressure campaign from the president, from Rudy Giuliani, and from several of the people who are also indicted. I spoke to Rusty yesterday.
Rusty, yeah.
I spoke to Speaker Bowers yesterday. Here's what he said.
I'm a witness. And when they put my hand on the Bible or whatever they do, I'm going to tell the truth.
The Arizona GOP has called Speaker Bowers unfit to serve. How do you think about Speaker Bowers and how he handled the pressure campaign and that moment in Arizona history?
I think he's an American hero. I think he's been a beacon of moral courage. And so I think that we need to have an introspective moment when we're throwing people like Rusty Bowers out of the party, out of polite society within the Republican Party. We need to be asking, what changed that a man who we held in high regard, what happened that we were willing to call this man unfit to serve overnight? And so I think that Rusty—
Do you see the Arizona Republican Party doing that kind of introspection?
No, not yet.
What will it take?
Maybe accountability like this. Maybe more people saying, oh my gosh, there was something to that.
The Arizona Attorney General is a Democrat.
Correct.
And several of the defendants have already accused her of weaponizing the justice system against Republicans.
Okay.
The Arizona Republican Party has dismissed the charges as blatant abuse of power. As a Republican yourself, how do you see politics at play here?
I think that a grand jury gave this a clean bill, which means it had probable cause. And if you read the indictment, it's very thorough. And I think it's disrespectful to the legal process to so offhandedly dismiss it.
What do you say about those who fear that this kind of prosecution will hinder legitimate election challenges in the future?
Thousands of election challenges have happened over the last few years. 99% of those don't result in any sort of criminal penalty. You're allowed to file a claim in the court. You're allowed to ask questions. Don't break the law. It's as simple as that.
Given that this all stemmed from President Trump's insistence that he actually won Arizona, does it bother you that he isn't charged?
I haven't given that much thought yet, but ultimately, I think leaders need to be held accountable. I don't think that that's that outlandish a principle, and quite frankly, is something that the Republican Party revered until recently is personal accountability and legal accountability.
How close did we actually get to a situation where the results of the 2020 election in Arizona were overturned?
I think quite close. I think but for the courage of a few people like Rusty Bowers, like the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors, and a few others out there, I think we put ourselves in a pretty perilous situation. And I'm proud of those people, but it also means that we need to do things so that if this ever comes around again, hopefully there will be more people equipped with information that will say, no, that's not how this worked. That's an implausible theory, and you shouldn't go down that route.
The idea is that you'll have inoculated the public in Maricopa County against claims of election theft in the future.
In an ideal world, if somebody said the voting machines, which were programmed by Hugo Chavez, flipped votes from Trump to Biden, then in my ideal world, we will have educated so many people that will say, but what about the political party hand count audit after? Wouldn't that have revealed the discrepancy? And so therefore, you shouldn't go down this road. Are we there yet? No. Will we try to get closer to that point by November 2024? Absolutely, yes. And that's always what I try to leave voters with is like, if there's a way we can show you, we make you feel more confident, give you more information, please let us.
You've got about 6 months to help inform the public. When you ran for recorder in 2020,
I envisioned all of this.
What did you expect? What did you think the job would be?
I got a sense of it being a heightened profile just because some of the conversations were happening around election administration. And of course, it was starting to become more and more of Trump's talking points during the 2020 campaign. But no, I never would have thought that we would have become sort of the center of the political conversation in Arizona. And then in some ways, the center of the conversation about whether American democracy, and even we get international people coming in and being like, is American democracy going to be okay? And where do they come? They come to Maricopa County just because we've been the focal point of so many of these conversations. And so I don't want to say that's any sort of reason that's attributed to me, although I like to think I have my merits, but it's more to do with Maricopa County being of the large voting jurisdictions in the United States, by far the most competitive.
Why did Maricopa County become such a tipping point in this question of whether democracy?
Yeah, I think it's for a whole bunch of reasons. The core of it is our voter registration statistics. We're divided a third, a third, a third, and so we're a very competitive county. But we're a county that has been a reliably red county, and so we're changing. We're in a state of flux. Lots of people moving into Arizona. And then I think you can't discount the importance of both the border and just the sort of the sense of otherness, the sense of change that impresses upon Arizona. And then the Cyber Ninjas review in 2021 that was here and really made us the mecca of people who are election deniers or stop the stealers or whatever you call them, this was the place to visit.
Donald Trump and his associates cast significant doubt on the count of the vote in Maricopa County.
Correct.
And that led to this Republican state legislature bringing in an external audit by a company that had never conducted audits before called Cyber Ninjas to recount the votes.
Correct. So lots of questions going on, particularly regarding Dominion, which we use Dominion tabulation equipment here in Maricopa County. And so in the early months of 2021, we at the county said, hey, we're willing to do a couple more tests just to show, clear the air. So we brought in a few elections professionals, technology companies to test the tabulation equipment to make sure that it never connected to the internet during the voting period, to make sure there was no malware installed, to make sure there was no such thing as vote switching. And so we did that. State Senate says, not good enough, hands everything over to a group called the Cyber Ninjas, which, exactly as you said, had no experience in this, had been connected to some of the wildest conspiracy theories, was connected to Donald Trump associates, was connected to people who said, we want to change the outcome of this election. And then they embarked on what was supposed to be just a few week project that turned into 6 months. It raised millions and millions of dollars, and it drew international attention for anyone who wanted to continue to subscribe to the theory that the elections were stolen.
When the Cyber Ninjas were finished with their audit,
yep,
they actually found that Biden had more votes,
yeah,
than your county had initially counted.
So I think they completely falsified that. I don't think that they had a system that allowed them to get a reliable count. And I don't think any stock should be put in what they said, even if they said we found more ballots or more votes for Joe Biden. I think that was a way to try to bribe them some credibility such that then they could make all these allegations about cybersecurity and that this could have been done or inflated voter rolls. And so I really wouldn't put any stock in that. If I had to guess, I would say that they just made up those numbers. It was such a silly endeavor. And I think it's a stain forever on Arizona's reputation. Not even that you would be indulging these fantasies, but that you just chose such grossly incompetent people to do it.
I should mention that you and I have known each other for some time in the context of Republican Party politics.
Correct.
We met when we were both young, idealistic conservatives. The position of recorder of Maricopa County is actually a partisan position.
You are
a Republican, and you ran for the office as a Republican.
Correct.
When did you realize the job was going to be more than you signed up for?
Started getting a sense of it when Donald Trump was talking about mail voting in particular in the lead up to 2020 election. That was problematic for us just because Arizona is a very heavy vote by mail state.
More than half of Arizona's population votes by mail.
85% of our last election was vote by mail. When it really dawned on me was the night of election night 2020. So November 3rd, 2020, polls have closed. This facility is tabulating results. Alex Jones is out in the parking lot with a whole bunch of people, flags, guns, the whole nine yards.
The world is watching the example of Arizona. Yes. The president is watching the example. You're not going to let him steal this.
Alex Jones, for those who don't know of him, is a right-wing talk radio show host who famously perpetuates conspiracy theories about a wide range of topics. So that night, Alex Jones is in the parking lot. And you know that this is not going to be an ordinary election counting process.
And some of these people are people that were my allies, people who undoubtedly voted for me, people who I had met with before. And they're saying, stop the count, stop the count. It was such a display of demagoguery, that the type of demagoguery that I always associated with the left, sort of the grab your pitchfork, grab your torch, and we're going to go burn down the institution, that it was really disheartening, such that I went on Twitter and said something like, guys, this isn't helping, please stop. And that was the beginning of now a 3.5 year running rift between me and that element of the movement.
Talk to me about how the next 2 to 4 months went for you.
Yeah. I remember specifically going in February of 2021 to a grassroots Republican group that I'd gone to plenty of times when I was a candidate and even times when I was just a Republican activist. And there were 40 to 50 people there. And the first question they asked me was, were the machines connected to the internet? We'd just done these tests by two different companies. And I knew categorically, no. But you could see that that was the wrong answer to give to this crowd. But I gave it nonetheless. And from there, it just went downhill, lots of shouting, lots of yelling. They took a YouTube video. I think it got over 1 million views of me basically being harassed. And it was so striking, so jarring. And I remember calling some of my team members and just being like, wow, the world has completely shifted. I don't even know if I can go to these things anymore, even though I'd spent my entire life for the past 3 years going to things like that.
And the same Republicans who had just elected you.
Same Republicans.
Were now shouting you down for not having the answer that they believe to be the case in terms of the voter fraud and the voter conspiracies about the tabulation.
But it was the right answer.
You seem completely nonpulsed by having to give the right answer, even when it's the unpopular answer in the base of the Republican Party here that elected you.
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
I don't know. I guess just it's always bothered me when people have been illogical about things, untruthful about things. Sort of retrospectively, this is cheesy, but if you'll indulge me, book 5 of Harry Potter.
Uh-huh.
Remember it?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're in it right now.
I've
got an 8 and a 10 year old.
All right, great.
We're so actually through all of them, so I have to remember which one was 5. But
okay, so they have the same reading habits as I have. You're 8 and you're 10 year old. So if they want to talk fantasy books, I'm their person. But so Harry knows that the Dark Lord has returned, right? Uh-huh. And the whole world is ignoring it and wanting to ignore it. Why? Because it's convenient. Why? Because it sort of fits their worldview. But he persists in saying that this is the fact. And so I took some inspiration in that. And that was a book that was incredibly meaningful to me.
Donald Trump is your Voldemort.
I don't want to say that. The Dark Lord, please.
Okay. I'm sorry. You shall not be named.
No, but I don't know. But I guess I always thought there were lies that were too big for any politician. I knew there were lies. I've probably indulged in some of them. Like, I'm the greatest. You should vote for me. You know, this is the most important election of our time. A lie that probably every politician has told. Although that might be true of this upcoming election. But
do you think that would be the case?
Yes, I do.
Tell me why.
Because I think the future of our institutions, the future of our experiment is on the... I don't think we've had anyone who has been so blatantly authoritarian in his rhetoric ever, or maybe at least not in the last 50 years.
Is it just the rhetoric?
It's the actions too, of course. I mean, calling Brad Raffensperger and saying, find me 11,000 votes. I would have thought that in a say 2014 world would have been enough to be disqualifying.
He called other Arizona officials as well.
Called Rusty. Yeah.
You've talked about the death threats that you've received, that people who work with you received.
Yeah.
You've even talked about narrowly escaping some very uncomfortable encounters that could have become much more dangerous. And you've said that this stems from politicians, among them Carrie Lake. You've noted that Trump has amplified baseless allegations that your office has been engaged in election fraud.
Yes.
And that's part of it. Is that the genesis of the violence or of the agitation and the disruption?
I don't want to deprive any one individual's agent of their agency. I don't want to absolve them of all responsibility. When somebody does something like makes a physical threat or calls and leaves a threatening message, that's ultimately on that person and shame on that person. But as I've said before, if you're a leader and you broadcast to millions of people that the most heinous political crime in the history of our country has been perpetrated right in front of your very nose, right under your nose, then you got to be kind of foolish to think that nobody of your millions of followers is going to take that as reason for defending the Republic, doing something extreme, doing something that is out of their character to try to resolve that. And so I guess in some ways, January 6th makes a certain level of sense. I mean, we all think of ourselves as patriots. That's what this country was founded on. And the notion that you would take up for a certain idea or for a certain system, the only problem is it was all perpetuated on a falsehood. And so I do ultimately hold the leaders more responsible than I do the average person.
Let me ask you about Carrie Lake, who was the Arizona Republican gubernatorial candidate in 2022, who had an unsuccessful bid to become governor of the state and who is now very likely to be the Republican nominee for the Senate position that is open in the fall. Last year, you sued her for defamation. What had she said about you that was worthy of a defamation lawsuit?
Yeah. She said a lot of things. A lot of them were not worthy of a defamation lawsuit. So insulting my abilities, insulting my intelligence, insulting my hair. People like to insult my hair. I'm losing it. I know that. But, so that's all First Amendment protected, obviously. But she was making very specific allegations alleging that I had done very serious crimes to throw the election to her opponent, Katie Hobbs. But she was told in no unspecific terms from the Superior Court, from the Court of Appeals, from the Arizona Supreme Court, that these allegations had no foundation. And yet she kept making them and making them and making them. And I thought that, gosh, it's going to be nice when this lady like moves on from having lost and she's going to get a new job and she's going to presumably want to focus on that. But this was her meal ticket. This was her ticket to remaining politically relevant. This was what she was fundraising off of. And so, you know, how many punches do you take before you punch back? I'm just like anyone else. If you prick me, I bleed. And eventually that was enough for me. And so we filed. And so far it's been very successful because the claims are false. she should have known they were false, and they've done real damage. And so those are the elements of a defamation suit.
You've effectively already won the case.
Yes.
Because she now says that she won't defend herself from the claim. Although she does admit no wrongdoing, she's essentially chosen not to fight in court.
It is a bit rich for somebody who's been banging on for the past 2 years that she has easy evidence of widespread corruption, widespread fraud, for somebody who says she stands by every single claim, and then she's served up on a silver platter an opportunity to prove it in front of a court of law, and she says, I'll take a pass on that. I think that's pretty telling.
What do you think the impact of that lawsuit will be on the 2024 election?
Well, it won't just be in my lawsuit. I think it'll be the Dominion lawsuit against Fox that Fox settled for $787 million. I think it will be Ruby and Shea Moss's lawsuit against Rudy Giuliani. It'll hopefully have a cavening effect on just like how zany an idea are you willing to broadcast on your network. Now, there's one specific actor who seems undeterred. It doesn't seem like you can throw any number at him to get him to stop. And I think for that, it will just have to be the political winds will have to change.
You mean Donald Trump, the former president, who's the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party?
Correct.
According to federal prosecutors, nearly half of federal election-related threats nationwide involve targeting Arizonan officials.
Yeah.
Like yourself.
Yeah, I think I'm leading the league.
This does include threats against you and your office.
Yes.
Often from people who are out of state. How has this impacted your ability to do your job?
It's added to it. All of this has just added to our plate. So we...
How so?
Well, I think it used to just be you run a decent mousetrap. Now, every bit as important as running a mousetrap, the election administration process, is explaining the process.
Yeah.
So doing information, doing videos, we had a teletown hall this week. We did a live stream walk around our facility, election tour. We do videos, we do articles, we do reports, we do seminars, we go out into the public. And so that's been a big component. And then if you just look at this facility, security is baked into everything we do now. Security of your ballot, security of the voter, but also security of the worker. And so when you came to this facility, you hopefully saw a fairly imposing black wrought iron fence that was around there. And that's something that wasn't there in 2020. Mm-hmm. That was a reaction to that. And so I like to say that I came into office and I built the wall in my first term, and it's around this facility. So,
but who paid for it?
We did, evidently. County taxpayers.
In all seriousness, how did Arizona become the target of so much violent hostility across the country?
We didn't have prominent Republican leaders pushing back against some of this. So I think, why did we part ways from Georgia? I think because of people like Brian Kemp and Brad Raffensperger, I think, took at least part of the party in a different direction and said, this isn't constructive towards a conservative
agenda.
You're
saying there were no statewide electeds in Arizona who did the same thing that Brad Raffensperger did in Georgia?
Correct. And then there were some very loud, very prominent people who built their entire political reputations on this falsehood. People who had either no business in politics or no experience in politics. So Carrie Lake is somebody, lots of people ask me, did you know Carrie? Like, no, she wasn't involved in Republican Party politics. She was like a Buddhist Democrat until a few years ago. And that's not my circle. And so, you know, I didn't know her. I knew the people who had been part of the conservative movement, the people who had been showing up to Federalist Society events. And so she's somebody who took something like the Cyber Ninjas audit and took it into stardom. And so you had no statewide loud voices pushing back. And then you had a few people for whom it was everything. And then an economy built up around it. And there are some people who their livelihoods would be destroyed or their political possibilities would be destroyed if we broadly acknowledged it as false now.
Without that Republican leadership pushing back on the election lies perpetrated by the likes of Carrie Lake and Donald Trump, both of them will be on the ballot in November here in Arizona. What are the prospects of violence if they were to both lose?
I hope. I mean, all it takes is one or two people, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm proud of how Arizonans went through the presidential preference election. I'm proud, by and large, of how we handled the 22 elections in terms of how Arizonans behaved. There was some disruptive behavior, but nobody did anything purposely violent. Now, I'll caveat that with saying that the sheriff's office here, the county sheriff's office, all the local police departments, the Arizona Department of Homeland Security, the National Department of Homeland Security, all invested resources that they never would have thought within a million miles of being reasonable for election administration into securing this process and securing voters. So did we get through all of those elections without any incidents? Yes. Do we realize that it's going to be, tensions are going to be even higher? Yes. But I think that our law enforcement has been pretty amazing, and I think that they'll continue to do that. But again, I think it goes to leadership. If you have leaders who are saying things that might not qualify as incitement in terms of under the law, like incitement to violence, but again, if you say that something is being done horrific, the country is being stolen from you as you know it, it doesn't take a lot of imagination to think that somebody's going to do something pretty outlandish as a result of hearing that.
If something were to happen to you or someone who works in this office,
yeah,
would you hold Donald Trump and Carrie Lake accountable?
I would, yes. Especially if something happened to somebody in this office. I mean, that would just, there's lots of things you can walk away from, including losing. If I lose my reelection, I can walk away from that. Somebody being hurt, that would scar me for life. And it's obviously to say nothing of the person who is hurt, which is where the real focus should be. So what we have committed and what we have affirmed as a county is that the second you join us, whether as a full-time staff member or whether as a temporary worker who's just in for 2 days, no matter what your political party, no matter what your responsibility as part of this election, you're one of the team and we look after our team. And so we're going to do everything in our power to make sure that our team members are safe and are comfortable. So if you come around here during election time, you'll see all these floodlights, you'll see the sheriff's office out, you'll see armed security guards in this facility and whatnot. And so in 22, we didn't have a problem recruiting people. I mean, we had to make some efforts, but people came. And I hope that that will be true for the 24 cycle as well.
You yourself are in a crowded primary right now because you're up for re-election.
Yep.
The Republican primary has some other Trump-adjacent candidates, including your sort of main opponent, Justin Heap.
Correct.
How do you measure your prospects of winning re-election in a closed partisan Republican primary where you are so squarely on the wrong side of the Republican Party apparatus now, as you've described?
Well, because we're in this building, I'm going to sort of leave some of the political stuff aside, but I'll just say that I'm going to continue telling the truth about our elections. I'm going to continue telling the truth about the people who work here. I hope that's not bad politics. I pray that's not bad politics. And quite frankly, to sort of step back from my personal political fortunes, it hasn't been a great thing for the Arizona Republican Party. In 2016, my party, the Arizona Republican Party, had 2 U.S. senators, had a governor, had an attorney general, had a secretary of state. We now have 0 U.S. senators. We don't have a governor. We don't have an attorney general. We don't have a secretary of state.
Republicans have been vanquished from all the top offices statewide and in the federal level, at least in the Senate.
I think the crasser way of saying that is we've gotten our butts kicked. and so I don't know why anyone would want to keep going down this road.
So you're saying it's not a winning formula.
It's not, but some people think it's dispositive in terms of a Republican primary. But what it is, and I'm going to contest that, I don't believe it is so, but what they know it is absolutely necessary for is for the blessing of Donald Trump. For the blessing of Donald Trump, the most important thing is saying that Donald Trump won the 2020 election.
What's the worst case scenario if somebody who is an election denier replaces you as the recorder of Maricopa County?
Yeah, I think there's lots of things that you could do in terms to tinker with the system. I think the first thing, though, that you'd see is you'd lose the professional staff. The people who have been working in elections and voter registration, some of them for 30 plus years, wouldn't want to be led by a person who has called them criminals, wouldn't want to be led by a person who has indulged the wildest conspiracy theories, wouldn't want to be led by a person who might ask them to do unlawful things. Now, the beauty of elections in America and the beauty of laws in Arizona is that ultimately these things reveal themselves. Ultimately, it's actually quite hard to manipulate a voting system. So what I think you would see more than any sort of stolen election would be a system that's not running well.
You're seeking re-election despite these kind of threats and this harassment. A lot of election officials actually are just stepping away and taking the moment to retire because they've never had to face this before and they've had full careers being election administrators without this kind of harassment. According to one report, more than half of Arizona's chief election officials have stepped down or been replaced since November of 2020. Explain what impact that has on the administration of an office like this.
It's challenging, and it's just an indictment of where we're at as a society that all of these people feel like this is no longer something worth pursuing, which I think many of them got into because, gosh, what gets more American pie than administering elections and interacting with your community in that manner? And so for me, as all of this has gone up, the sort of the value proposition has gone up as well. I still am something of a zany libertarian who got into politics thinking that the hill that I would fight on would be on some sort of regulatory principle, and that would be fantastic, and that would be my life's work. But now I get to be part of this conversation about the future of American democracy, the future of American institutions, a shared truth. And those are pretty weighty, significant conversations. And so that's why I want to be part of it. And also because the team here doesn't deserve it. The team here deserves somebody that continues to tell their story, continues to defend them. And so that's why I'm doing it again.
What more can be done to help protect election workers and give them confidence that they will be taken care of?
Incentives for politicians and repercussions for politicians.
Like what?
Well, I think Fox felt some repercussions for putting election officials in danger. Fox.
You're talking about Fox News and the way they told the story of the election workers in Georgia.
Correct. So Fox has some culpability for the complete turning upside down of the lives of Ruby and Shay Moss because they aired that nonsense. Their incentives have now been changed. If some politicians, if they find out from the Chambers of Commerce of the world that we won't touch you with a 9-foot pole if you go down these anti-democratic, anti-society veins of thought, then I think you start to see less of that. But it takes leadership from people in those types of positions to say, cut the nonsense. Now, obviously, that's not happening very broadly. Obviously, there were no consequences in terms of the Republican primary for president of the United States. I don't know how much is happening on a local level.
About that Republican primary for president of the United States, I think there was a lot of hope from anti-Trump Republicans that somebody else would emerge.
Yeah.
There were several other candidates, got no traction, and ultimately didn't mount any serious challenge to Donald Trump. What does that tell you about where the Republican Party is nationally?
It's Trump's party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you see this as an existential election?
Yes, I do. And I think that regardless of, like,
Trump do? If Trump were to win, what would he do? What are you worried about that he would do that would unravel American democracy?
I'm no Trump expert, and I know that lots of people, I think Bob Kagan wrote another piece for either the Post or the Times recently. And so those people have thought about it more, but certainly I'm not somebody who's enamored with the notion of being a dictator for one day or for any days. I'm certainly not enamored with the notion that we should shred the Constitution. I'm certainly not enamored with the idea that the DOJ will be weaponized to go after political enemies. I think that's all antithetical to the American spirit and to conservatism. To me, there was no clearer imagery than when Mike Pence, lifelong conservative, somebody I held in the highest esteem, governor, U.S. House member, vice president, when we bring guillotines to the Capitol lawn and say we should hang Mike Pence, and just the irony that modern day conservatism was born out of a reaction to the French Revolution, and that's when Edmund Burke started writing it. I was just like, wow, we have really gone off the rails here, and it seems to just be...
Or it's come full circle.
Yeah, yeah. So no, I think that for this election, let's hold serve on the American experiment, and then maybe in the future we can get back to debating, like, it's probably not a good idea to just forgive the debt of a bunch of student loans. Like, that's bad public policy, and it goes against conservatism as well, but seems pretty small right now in the grander scheme of things, as much as I disagree with that as a matter of public policy.
You have really gone out of your way to be transparent with the press and the public about how this building works, how you process ballots, how it works here. You've given election tours to various civic groups. What are you trying to show the residents of Maricopa County?
Yeah. I'm clinging on to the Enlightenment belief that more knowledge and more information can drive out bad information and false theories.
You think you can beat disinformation?
I hope so.
Through transparency?
I hope so.
You've talked about the kind of the threats that you've gotten, the unexpected experience you've had in this elected position, but you've sort of seemed to have really relished the challenge. Almost like you've really risen to the moment. You feel that this wasn't the fight you were seeking, but it's the fight that came to you, and you seem to relish in it. You engage on Twitter and on X with conspiracy theorists. So you're not only educating civic groups and the mediating institutions in Arizona, but you're also engaging with the conspiracy theorists to try to shut them down. Is there some part of this that delights you?
Like I said, the gravity of the whole situation and being able to be part of something that's significant. As far as engaging with those people, I feel that we're being outgunned 100-1 in terms of people who are spreading conspiracies versus people who are knowledgeably and technically pushing back against those theories. So that's why I try to do that. There have been some dark moments, some real dark moments. And there have been moments where I've wanted to quit. And it might come to that.
How you would quit?
I'm not be here in 2025 through the re-election process.
Yeah, if you aren't re-elected. Right.
But I've been blessed.
What kind of personal toll has it taken?
Loss of friendships, certain security measures that we've taken, all consuming in our lives. There's no joke, hundreds of thousands of people in this country who think I'm a criminal. That's not a warm and fuzzy feeling. So, there have been some dark moments. I have had an incredibly blessed life. I've gone to some of the best schools in the country, met some of the best people in the world, gotten to work as a lawyer, gotten to work as a business person. I remind myself that at the end of the day, I can walk away from that and resume that previous life. I can walk away from this and resume that previous life. But I'd be saddened if I walked out, walked away from the team, walked away from our country, in what I feel is really a moment in history. And I really do think that there's going to be a chapter written on this in future American history textbooks on this moment. And I think that of all the gin joints and all the towns and all the world, that Maricopa County, for some reason, is looming large in that chapter. And so I do at least appreciate aspects of being able to be part of something that I think is really, really, really important.
What will a successful November 2024 look like to you?
That the election is administered with few mishaps, that no violence is committed, and that the results are tabulated, and then they're canvassed, and then we hand off authority to those who are elected with as little disruption as possible.
What is your degree of confidence that vision will play out as you've just described?
More likely than not.
55 to 45?
No, 80-20? Closer to 80-20. Now, do I think that everyone will accept the results? No. But I still think that because of our courts, because of our law enforcement, because of the people who actually work the system, because of the nature of American elections, where there's going to be lots of Republicans elected, even if the Republican president of the United States is not reelected, I think that ultimately we hold on. But the threat is real. And I think that anyone who says, well, you know, January 6th was just a bunch of tourists, like, do a little reading, watch some of the court cases, listen to some of the testimony, watch some of the same congressmen who were running scared on that day and what they said in the immediate aftermath, even if they say differently now. This was serious. Learn a little history. Learn that we are anomalous in the history of the world, that we haven't had anything like that, and take some pride in that. Take some pride that we aren't just another Latin American regime that gets turned over every 20 years, and then work towards that.
You just mentioned January 6th. Do you have any concern that in the event of a close election where one of the contestants, President Trump, invokes a high degree of uncertainty about the outcome of the election, mm-hmm. That he might direct people to act violently here at this office or in this state in the same way that he did at the Capitol on January 6th?
I keep hoping that people have limits, but each time
well,
keep
the evidence is not, yeah. The evidence is not there. The evidence is not there for at least in this case. I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, you must have thought of this. Are there plans for that kind of a scenario?
Yeah, there are groups that plan out that. We plan out that here.
So are you prepared in the event that kind of scenario?
We're prepared. But I would say to all of the leaders and all the politicians, write down now with a physical pen or pencil in a notebook and say, what are some lines that no matter how tempting or no matter how dire the circumstances I think of the other side winning, I will not cross, so that when we get to November, when we get to December, you look down on that and it says like, oh, I'll never try to disrupt the electoral count and let people into the building or say that they were all just patriots. And maybe now the line is, I will never incite, you know, a violent overthrow of an elections office. That sounds ridiculous. Like, of course, everyone's going to write that down. But if it's there in writing, then at least you're able to remind yourself from 6 months ago is able to remind your now self that your code of ethics and you, when you were more clear-headed, said that's a deal breaker. And I hope that disciplines some people.
Stephen Richer, thank you for inviting us here into the Maricopa County Reporter's Office. And thank you for sharing your thoughts and your experience here on Firing Line.
Thank you very much.